A former public official sentenced for bribery while Lincoln Plowman is going to jail. Republicans accused of declaring partisan war in Indianapolis, a Super Bowl video gone wrong, and tuition breaks at Ball State. That plus the Save the Star March and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending December 2, 2011.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. The path to a successful business has unexpected twists and turns. The legal professionals at Ice Miller are dedicated to guiding businesses along the journey. Experience takes businesses to the top. Ice Miller can help them stay there. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.
This week, a former member of the Indianapolis City County Council was sentenced for bribery. Lincoln Plowman will serve 40 months in a federal prison and 2 years on probation. In 2009, an undercover FBI operation showed Plowman accepting $5,000 from an FBI agent pretending to be the developer of a strip club. Plowman claimed he was working as a consultant. He was the council's Republican majority leader at the time. When authorities say he asked for cash to help review potential sites and zoning issues for the club, he was indicted last year and 6 months after he resigned from the council and took early retirement from his position as a city police major. U.S. Attorney Joe Hogsett hailed the sentence.
There is no question that the United States Attorney's Office and the Department of Justice will remain extremely vigilant in its investigation and its prosecution of anyone who violates the public trust, as was the case in the Lincoln Plowman trial.
Did Lincoln Plowman get what he deserved? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Eric Holcomb, John Schwanes, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV State House reporter Jim Shella. Eric Holcomb, was Lincoln Plowman made to be an example?
Well, the story just goes to prove that no one is above the law, and if you abuse the public trust, there are consequences. And that's what we're seeing play out here. I hope we're able to find out more information on the folks that abused the law up in South Bend and forged those signatures and all the 60-some indictments down in North Vernon as well, because, again, no one, regardless of party, is above the law.
You're talking about voter fraud cases.
Sure.
Are they in the same category as bribery?
Yeah, you abuse the public trust, and there are consequences.
All right. 3 years, 4 months in prison. Mm-hmm. He could have faced 30.
Well, I think 30 probably was more in line with the violent crime. So I think the sentence is appropriate for this. And, you know, it's interesting. You had the Republican majority leader indicted and convicted. And, of course, you've got the chief election officer, who's a Republican, indicted for voter fraud, of all things. You've got the business with all the money having to be refunded by the governor and by the former Republican prosecutor because they took money from Tim Durham when they shouldn't have. So you've got all of that. But, you know, some people would argue that that's a culture of corruption. But I know that most of the Republicans that I know, including Eric, are honest, law-abiding people.
Sure.
So I wouldn't go that far.
He's the only Republican you know, though.
I'm glad that, you know, that they're obviously weeding this out because it does destroy the public faith in the system to have that kind of thing go on for not only the majority leader, on the Republican side and on the council, but a major in the police department. Okay, so yeah, it's a good thing.
He was being trusted in at least two capacities. Joe Hogsett made comments that seem to suggest there will be more public corruption cases that come up in the near future.
You really get the sense that this attorney general's or district attorney's office is working these cases and following all the leads. You know, Eric mentioned those voter fraud cases. One is not in Joe's jurisdiction, but the other one is. And I think that it's very clear that he sees this as a very big part of his responsibility, and we've seen a heightened profile. He's out in front of the cameras saying that, you know, justice will be blind and meted out, and I think he intends to live up to that.
Lincoln Plowman was an interesting case. He received $5,000, a promise of another $1,000. He threw away a political career and a profession for $6,000. Hard
well,
to explain.
That you know
well,
of.
And keep in mind, other...
And there was an additional $12,000 a year that he was receiving from a strip club
right.
as a consultant.
Right, which again would call into question, I think, the judgment that you would have as a publicly elected official, not to mention, as was pointed out, a high-ranking officer in the local law enforcement agency. Just not probably the smartest thing to do to accept a $1,000 a month retainer as a consultant for a strip club. There's just some really bad judgment here. And clearly, if you look at a lot of the reporting that's been done in the last week and even back to several months ago to the trial, a lot of people, even of his own party, thought there was a real arrogance to him, a real sort of cavalier, buffoonish, I think was a word I used in one interview, characterization of him. And that's not the kind of public official we want or need. And that's why I think... Even though he was very tearful and very remorseful, and a lot of people are saying, well, there was there's the old, you know, old version of him, and the new version that's completely, as a judge, the sentencing judge pointed out, Larry McKinney, you know, you've got to have deterrence, you've got to punish the crime, and when you violate the public trust as has been done here, I think it's important that a message be sent.
All right, Republicans still on the Indianapolis City County Council lose their majority on the first of the year but are still pressing forward with a redistricting plan. Democrats call that a declaration of partisan war. The man in charge of the new maps says he didn't design them for a big partisan fight. David Brooks says he acted as directed by Council President Ryan Vaughn. He met with interested voters at public hearings this week. Afterwards, he said his proposal meets legal standards. Brooks says it also meets Vaughn's requirement that the districts be competitive.
Clearly, the Democrats, if they would draw their own map, could draw one much more favorable to Democrats if they wanted, just as I could have drawn maps that were much more favorable to Republicans. But I hope this is a map that the two sides can talk about.
Ann Delaney, how does this dispute end?
Well, I think what's going to happen here is that the mayor is going to have to, if he wants to show that he's above politics and he's not a typical politician and he wants bipartisan support, he's going to have to shut this down. Because this is, you know, David Brooks is lucky he was in an interior room when he said it wasn't being done for partisan advantage. When you look at this, they're creating supermajority black districts. They're using race to try to divide the voting electorate, and they can't do that under the law, number one. Number two, they're not even supposed to do them this year. They're supposed to be done in 2012. Last I looked at the calendar, we're not there yet. So he's obviously doing this for partisan advantage, and when it was done the last time around, the Republican county chairman testified in favor of it because he was consulted when those districts were redrawn, and it was done in a bipartisan fashion. That's not what they're doing
actually,
here.
Last time it ended up with the Supreme Court doing it.
The
right?
districts did, but when you did the precincts, which is what right. they're doing now, it was done with the Republican Party support. So they're going to have to either declare war on a partisan basis or they're going to have to pull this back.
Are the Republicans trying to take advantage of a circumstance here before they lose the majority?
No, and Exhibit A, the mayor has bipartisan support. We just had an election. That's been proven. And these, you know, populations shift over time, over 10 years, and districts need to shift and change accordingly.
But why not wait until after the
first
year?
Which
the law requires.
We'll see if it passes now or later.
Yeah, they ought to walk out on this one.
You think that Republicans still hold the majority? You think
some ordinances sail through, some take time. We'll see.
And you think Republicans on the council will vote against a Republican redistricting plan?
We'll see.
Okay.
Well, you know, given that this is a mayor who touts his bipartisanship, or maybe I should say his nonpartisanship, you know, how many times have we heard, I'm not a politician? You would think that the tone coming out of the election ideally would
well,
be a little bit different.
He's been silent on this.
But would be a little bit
he can't take the fruits
different.
Of it. You know, he's got to stand up. He's got to show some leadership.
And I mean, as a practical matter, I think he could exert his influence and bring about some changes in this regard so that it could be sent to the state election division for review, as has been customary in the past.
Every time.
And you know, it's the old expression, if it walks like a duck. Here you got a situation where the $225,000 was spent to a Republican election consultant attorney to do this. Those funds were not available.
A Republican Party official, too. Isn't he still the Washington County town?
I mean, there's
town
Washington. Just, There are several. You know, that's a perception problem. The fact that it was not whether it's legally obligated the city county council to send this to the state election commission for review or not is immaterial. They chose not to. This appearance that they're trying to get it done under the wire, it just leaves a bad taste. I think given what the election, which I think was about. You could read that as a call for bipartisanship or nonpartisanship.
Okay, so when Democrat Brian Mayhern says that this is a declaration of partisan war, is he calling it as he sees it, or is that hyperbole?
Well, I think he's calling it as he anticipates it, and I think he's making it more difficult for the mayor to stay silent on this issue. John's absolutely right. The mayor can declare on this and, you know, change his mind or put a position forward that says that we'll wait or we'll go through with it. And I think if he does go through with it, there is a problem of perception here. And I do think that it will make it more difficult to deal with the Democrat majority on the council going forward. The interesting thing is, as Ann suggests, maybe the Democrats decide to walk out. Well, there's been a deal reached on an issue that the Democrats very much want, and that is the smoking ban. And if they choose to walk out for purposes of these precincts, then they, threaten the deal that has been worked out on a smoking ban. So it's really an interesting political fight, and does set the stage for how they will work or not work going forward.
Well, and when at the same time that you've got this supposed declaration of partisan war, you've got a bipartisan agreement on a smoking ban. It's an interesting circumstance.
Well, but you know what they're trying to do. I mean, they're unconstitutionally trying to gerrymand those districts in a way to make super black majority districts and diffuse the Democratic vote, and it's unconstitutional. And they're doing it deliberately in a partisan fashion, under the wire, without taking all the normal steps that are done. And shame on them for even trying it.
The Democrats would sue if that actually...
There's no question.
Surely we're not talking about a Democrat walkout in December and a Democrat walkout in the General Assembly in January.
Well, maybe we are.
Well, if you look at the history of walkouts, certainly in the State House, what's maybe the subject that more often than not has been the spark? Redistricting.
Right. An Indianapolis version of the Super Bowl Shuffle, a video produced that produced such a negative response this week that it was removed from the internet by the Convention and Visitors Association. It's based on the video made famous by the Chicago Bears back in 1985. After it went viral, somebody formed a Facebook page titled "Make the Indy Super Bowl Shuffle Go Away." Others said there's only one Super Bowl Shuffle. Criticism of the message and the quality of the video was voluminous. The video was intended for meeting planners attending a trade show in Chicago next month.
There's a potential backlash against folks who aren't the target audience. The target audience has been nothing but positive feedback so far. We haven't had anything negative from any of the meeting professionals that we've sent this to in Chicago.
John Katzenberger, does that hurt our image?
You know, ultimately, I don't think so. I mean, I think it works very well for the target audience, as Mr. Hoops was talking about, and that's where it was intended. But, you know, it's very cheesy. It's kind of silly. A lot of people think it's not that great a thing. And Indianapolis is taking some hits, on places like Deadspin. But ultimately, it's just, it's a tempest in a teapot.
Well, that was Leonard Hoops of the ICVA who created this. I mean, by pulling it off the internet, they gave in to all the criticism. Didn't they just endorse the criticism?
Well, I don't know much about the internet. I'm not a tech-savvy guy, but I know nothing ever gets pulled from the internet. I mean, once it's...
That's why you just saw it.
Yeah, it's not going to be pulled. And all that does is spike the interest. And so the critics of this probably, they're going to be... ruining the day that they made it an issue, probably, because now I can see in the pregame show leading up to the Super Bowl, the network's trying to figure out something to fill time. Hey, there was this controversy in Indianapolis, and now it's going to be shown to millions of people across the country. I wonder if other cities would have had this kind of reaction. If this were New York, I mean, if this were L.A.
You're saying there's an inferiority complex?
I know that theory. I know that's
what
Deadspin is suggesting. It seems like the protest is a bit much, especially if you give credence to the notion that this was designed for a specific audience in the hospitality industry and it was meant for a trade show.
Does Indy have an inferiority complex?
No. In fact, just the opposite. We have proven ourselves fully capable. We are a premier destination for more than just sporting events, for any kind of big event. We've proven ourselves in diving, Olympics, track and field. We have the biggest race in the world, and some few thousand hits does not make something viral.
What was a bigger mistake, the creation of the video or the taking it off the internet?
Neither. It's much ado about nothing.
Nothing. You agree?
I hate to agree, but I do. And I don't think they could possibly have an inferiority complex. They stood up there and did that thing, so they must have a lot of self-esteem.
That's a very good point, Ed.
Yeah. You know, the original bears in this, back in 85, it took them 26 years to be recognized at the White House because there were, I think the Challenger disaster had occurred at that time. So yeah. It was only this year that they were recognized. So maybe in 26 years, people will come to appreciate this video for what it is. I'm not sure what it is, but they'll come to appreciate it for whatever that is.
Okay,
should
John.
Have stayed
all right, it's a theory.
Time
now.
Hold my breath.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question is, did the Super Bowl Shuffle video hurt the reputation of Indianapolis? Your choices are A, yes, B, it reinforced it, or C, does anybody have a sense of humor? Last week's question was, are Republicans risking their agenda by pursuing right-to-work legislation? 80% said yes, 13% said no, 7% said what agenda? If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Ball State University reacted this week to concerns about rising tuition costs. The university will adopt a series of incentives that could cut tuition by nearly $10,000 over 4 years. They include a $500 scholarship for graduating on time, reduced tuition for summer school, lower credit requirements in most majors, and free online classes for on-campus students.
We really wanted to put together a comprehensive package, which frankly no one else has done, that provides incentives for students to graduate in 4 years.
I would be willing to go to summer school if I knew it was going to help me graduate quicker and it would be affordable.
That's freshman Taylor Shelton, preceded by President Joanne Gora. John Schwanis, why don't they just reduce tuition?
It might seem to be the simpler approach, but I think they were trying to achieve some additional goals here. They pointed out that their campus is underutilized. All of the colleges, probably campuses in the state, are underutilized during the summer months. This is an opportunity perhaps to spread the burden out and take advantage of those of the resources that are available there. Also designed to try to give people who want to get through in 4 years, you know, some of us wish we were still in college. I don't know what the rush is, but some people apparently want to get out of there. So, but it's, I mean, I think that's why you're seeing this sort of tailored approach as opposed to just a simple, we'll lop it off at such and such a percentage.
Well, IU already cut the cost of summer school, and some other schools have acted. Is this a more comprehensive approach? Is this a more meaningful approach than the other institutions have?
Oh, and compared to other institutions, I think it's probably the most far-reaching. IU's moves, I think, are very important in that direction, too. It'll be interesting to see how other state universities react to this. And I think the legislative response, certainly from Senator Kinley, who's long been a critic of the universities raising their tuition as much as they have in recent years, bodes well for the universities. He seems to be pleased that they're at least addressing the cost issue. And I think he'll take that into account as he goes forward.
The one tuition break that most students can take advantage of is reducing graduation requirements from 126 right. credits to 120 in most mm-hmm. majors. They say 85% of the students might be affected by that. But will it hurt accreditation?
I don't think it'll hurt accreditation. And I think it's the right approach. And the reason they don't just simply lower tuition across the board is because they can't. The state support for higher education has declined, and they have to make it up among those students, from those students who can afford to pay. But this is a pretty creative way, I think, of trying to both utilize the resources year-round and make it affordable for students that are in that pinch. And I think IU and Ball State deserve a lot of credit for this.
And Purdue is still out there with kind of the loner failing to react to the criticism at this point.
Well, way to go to Ball State and all other universities that find creative reforms in tough times or good times.
Should Purdue do something?
All schools should be looking at creative reform.
And Jim, I think that's an interesting point because lawmakers are, I'm sure, if not literally, they have a figurative checklist, and they got the University of Southern Indiana check. They've got ISU rolling back its proposed increase check. Indiana University check. Now Ball State, what's missing? Purdue.
I'm not the only one who noticed. State Senator Luke Kenley took his plea for an internet sales tax to Congress this week. Kenley testified on Capitol Hill before a committee that includes Indiana Congressman Mike Pence. He was asked about the potential effect on the state budget of a tax on internet transactions.
The estimates in Indiana run anywhere from $150 million a year to $400 million a year under the current situation. I think the bigger issue that we need to think about here today in Congress is that this is a growing part of our commercial environment, so it's probably going to be a growing number regardless of what number you predict or settle on.
I don't think Congress should be in the business of picking winners and losers. And inaction by Congress today results in a system that does pick winners and losers.
Mike Pence there, Eric Holcomb. Is he running the risk of violating his no new tax pledge?
No, I don't think anyone's in favor of raising taxes. This is a complex issue and one that has to be dealt with from two different perspectives, the federal government and the state governments. And if that Supreme Court decision gets, if we address that and the law changes in the future, states will have to decide on how they're going to enforce it, this new hypothetical law.
What you're saying, should this be dealt with at the State House or on Capitol Hill?
Well, the best solution would be a fair and equitable national solution so that states can then figure out how to enforce it.
Should the state do something in the meantime?
The state should do something in the meanwhile. What Senator Kenley is doing is giving cover to the governor, because he has picked a winner. There is no doubt about the fact that Amazon.com has a presence in Indiana, and the governor has chosen not to the detriment of Indiana businesses like Simon Property Group, for example, not to collect sales tax from Amazon.com. So he has picked a winner in this. And, you know, we could be enforcing that right away, and we're not.
You know, I think it's important to realize that the sales tax that's not being collected from those internet transactions is actually due. Yes. People owe that tax according to Indiana law, and it's supposed to be declared on their income taxes.
Self-reporting.
That's right, and paid that way. Well, only $3 million is collected that way, so there are an awful lot of Hoosiers who owe tax that aren't paying it, and I think that's really what you're getting down to here. It's not a new tax. It's not an increase. It's whether everyone should pay the tax.
And whether retail sales are treated fairly.
That's right.
Amazon has an advantage. That's exactly right.
But there are folks who hold office who worry that it will be interpreted as a new tax. And that's why one of the things Luke Kenley is hoping for is that there might be some sort of super committee report or some sort of budget bill that this could be inserted in so that they wouldn't have to vote on it individually.
Sure, there's going to be that perception. I mean, there's hypersensitivity to the whole notion of what constitutes a tax increase and how can I avoid being labeled with that. And that's why you see some states, in the absence of the kind of federal action that Indiana and, 23 other states are advocating here with that federal approach, is doing what John alluded to, which is using use taxes statutes, which are on the books in some cases for 50, 60, 70 years. It's kind of hard to argue that that's a new tax if you can show that it was passed in the 1930s. And some states, neighboring Ohio, has, I think, doubled or tripled the size of its audit staff, and they are very actively going after not individuals at this point.
Kenley's argument is that costs money.
Well, sure, it costs money, but the idea, I guess,
it costs money to enforce the law. Okay, but you know what? It results in money coming in over and above that. And Amazon is the perfect example. The state ought to be collecting that, and they're not.
Should they be collecting it from the consumers that aren't paying it when they file their taxes?
And if they can find a way to do that, that would be great. But in the meanwhile, they can collect it from the businesses, and it's the governor's wink and nod to Amazon that isn't letting that happen.
Finally, employees of the Indianapolis Star conducted a march outside their own office building this week. They're demanding better wages, no outsourcing, and lower executive pay. Bobby King led others at the rally. He's been a reporter at the paper for 7 years and has witnessed waves of layoffs and pay cuts.
We're supposed to, as a newspaper, write about injustices in the community. We're supposed to defend the people who can't speak for themselves. And it's sort of interesting now we're finding ourselves up against somebody who's got their foot on our neck.
And Delaney, will that be effective?
I'm afraid it won't be effective, and I think that's a mistake. I think they're going to I'm frankly surprised by the number of people they had demonstrating there, because I didn't think they had that many reporters.
I think they got some help from organized labor and others.
Well, they may have, but when they can pay their ex-president $37 million and then have a 14% cut last year in the pay of the workers and ask for another one again this year, something is out of whack in that corporation, and it's really unfortunate because we depend on that for our news. Except for, of course, Channel 8.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
There are multiple sources for news, and the newspaper industry is declining. If you work in the newspaper industry, does it make sense to bite the hand that feeds you at this point?
Well, I suspect
it's not feeding you very well, though.
Yeah, I suspect not. However, I mean, over times change, and so do business models. First thing I used to do in the morning was walk out and grab my newspaper. Now I check my BlackBerry the first thing in the morning. So the business model will have to change, and it'll be about the consumer, and then it will drive.
Well, and the sad thing there, though,
first thing in the morning, you get up and say hello to your wife.
The second.
The sad thing there, though, when people check,
when
people check their BlackBerries, they think it's just kind of appearing, falling from heaven.
Right.
That's news generated by news organizations, largely local news organizations, and that's what's sad about this.
That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Eric Holcomb, John Schwanis of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/podcast, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity. Just go to Hoosier TV and look for Indiana Week in Review under News. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Things can go wrong in a thousand different ways. Businesses need a law firm that knows the thousand and first. The team of legal professionals at Ice Miller is committed to helping put the pieces back together. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.